Hello, I'm Anne McMillan with the University of Nevada School of Medicine. Our guest today is Dr. Brian Collister, an associate professor of internal medicine at the University of Nevada School of Medicine. Today we are talking about patient advocacy. Thank you for being here, Dr. Collister.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Let's start with a basic definition of a patient advocate.
You know, it's very difficult on some levels to think that a patient or someone seeking health care needs advocacy, as in some kind of public health way. But really, what we're talking about is on a very personal level, making sure that any individual's wishes with what they really want or don't want based on their own value system is conveyed to the healthcare providers and the healthcare team. And being a patient advocate, whether for yourself or for someone else, often bridges that gap.
If the healthcare system exists to take care of patients, why do patients then need a patient advocate?
I tend to look at it in three big categories where we often have this disconnect as far as quality of life. And those three big areas really fall into what are the patient's rights with regard to accepting treatment or declining treatment. The other two are a truly informed consent. We often have that piece of paper in front of us, sign here for this procedure. Do we really understand in all situations what we're signing for? And of course, the third issue is privacy. And who do I want to know about what's going on with my health care, my life, or my illness?
What role does a physician's own value system play in delivering health care options to patients?
You know, I'd love to think as a physician myself that we're always perfectly objective in analyzing anybody's healthcare wishes. But unfortunately, you know, we all have our personal biases. No matter how hard we try, they're going to come out in some level. And often in discussing patient choice, our biases will skew how that message is delivered. And with that in mind, it's really, really important to remind ourselves as physicians, as providers, nurse practitioners and physician assistants included, that this is not about us. I often tell the residents and medical students, this is not about you. This is not about me. This is about the patient and what the patient's value system is, what the patient wants, not what we think they should have.
Patients can be their own advocate or can rely on family members. How can family members help patients be their own advocate?
I think the critical factor here is remembering that an individual really should act as their own advocate. And in the healthcare system today, unfortunately, the squeaky wheel does get the grease. You need to speak up for yourself. Otherwise, those biases I talked about from the healthcare system are going to come out and maybe skew the direction you go. It's much easier and much more comfortable to do the next thing from a technical perspective. You know, here's the next procedure, here's the next test, here's the next medicine, without pausing long enough to ask ourselves, the patient and the family, do you really want this? You know, is this just extending life? Is it adding to the quality of your life? And those are important questions. And with regard to a family member, you know, an individual should answer for themselves as long as they can, as long as they are competent and able and awake. But at times, especially in the elderly generation, they don't want to disappoint the son or the daughter or the grandchild. And they may not, I hate to say it this way, but they may not be telling the truth with regard to what they really want because they don't want to disappoint the family. And when family members encourage and give their family member patient the permission and the encouragement to really truly express their own wishes, whether or not the family member agrees with that or not, is critically important. So for the family, it comes back to that same thing I teach the residents and the students. It's not about you. It's not about me. It's about you in that bed or you in that chair, the patient.
What happens when a patient can't speak for themselves? How does that process work?
Often, the simplest way to determine who a surrogate patient advocate should be is from a durable power of attorney. And that gets into all the fancy legalistic stuff. But when people fill out an advance directive, there's also a portion of that where you can designate an individual to make decisions for you, healthcare decisions, not financial, healthcare decisions for you if you are unable to speak up for yourself. Unable, again, maybe because you're in a coma. It may be because you're confused and you're not competent to make a decision. And those are very, very important, I think, forms to get filled out if you haven't done it. It varies a little bit state to state, but it's also important to know you can designate one person. You can designate a succession of people. You can say, I want my wife first or my husband first, my daughter second, right down the line. It's critically important to think about these things before they're necessary, because the decision making falls in a sequence state by state. The law adjusts this, but it falls in a sequence if you don't have this preset, where it's going to go to spouse, then it's going to go to adult children, then it's going to go to parents. And what's really a little bit scary is, if let's say it goes to adult children and you have five adult children, it's not a majority vote. In most states, it has to be unanimous. So if you have one outlier sibling that wants to flog old mom and dad when they really don't want it, that's going to be a problem. So it's critically important that before these things become critical, we establish the sequence of who understands what you want ahead of time.
And you're listening to Beyond the Headlines from KUNR Reno Public Radio. I'm Ann McMillan, and today we are talking with Dr. Brian Collister, Associate Professor of Medicine, about being a patient advocate. So, Doctor, when is it appropriate to transition from the patient advocating for themselves to a family member advocating on their behalf?
If someone comes into the hospital and is critically ill and is in a coma, or so obviously confused they couldn't make a rational decision, that's pretty straightforward, and we can figure it out in those situations. What's really tough is when a family member has a progressive, slow deterioration of their thinking and cognitive processes, such as in Alzheimer's disease. And it's pretty classic, in fact, for Alzheimer's patients to confabulate, meaning they'll lead you on when you ask them questions. So often family members think the patient is still with it from a judgment and cognitive standpoint, when in truth, to use a slang term, they're so far out to lunch, they don't know if they have a sandwich or egg salad. A typical example of that is we may ask a patient basic orientation questions in the hospital. And we'll say, who's the president? She'll say, oh, you know, that guy, what's his name? And the family member says, Obama, yeah. And they think they're oriented. Where if you really wait for an answer, patient has no idea. It's very common to have this leading confabulation and questioning. So it's critically important, especially with the slow progressive diseases that take the brain, unfortunately, all too slowly, to really establish when someone has crossed that line and is no longer oriented or able to truly understand their situation.
How can we be effective patient advocates, and what are the key components of effective advocacy?
The critical element, the real key, is to leave your belief system behind. I don't care if you believe personally in providing health care to a technical end till the very, very bitter end of any terminal disease, or if you believe in assisted suicide, or if you, whatever your beliefs, they have to be checked at the door. You need to establish that you truly understand the wishes, wants, and value system of that family member you're trying to advocate. It's got to be about them once again, not about you.
What are the challenges of effective patient advocacy?
I'll tell you, one of the toughest things for us in a hospital situation is when an elderly patient is truly still able to answer for themselves, and you'll have a family member who may have been designated as that durable power saying, hey, I'm my mom's durable, powerful healthcare, and I want you to do this and this and this and this. We have to politely step back and say, you know, your mom's still with it. It's not up to you yet. It's still up to your mom. She gets to make the call. And the flip side of that, and I mentioned this just a moment ago, is making sure that you don't insert your belief systems into their care. If they happen to be congruent, if they happen to be the same, well, that's fantastic. But often there's even subtle differences that you may not have appreciated. I think the real critical component of that part is taking the time. If someone has designated you as their durable, powerful healthcare, their potential advocate, really taking the time to sit down with them and talk about what they would want or not want in different scenarios. That's not your typical coffee klatch conversation. Hey, mom, you want to go on life support? What do you say? Yes or no? You have to make a point of talking about these very specific scenarios ahead of time.
Let's discuss quality of life and its relationship to patient advocacy.
I won't call it easy, but it's certainly possible to extend life far beyond what we ever dreamed, but often in vegetative states, in states of living that individuals would not want, bedridden, confused, comatose. These are all things that some people say, you know what, continue my life, extend my life, no matter what, for as long as possible. But I'll tell you, that's now a small minority. Most people will say, not all, that if my quality of life is such that I'm going to be comatose, vegetative, bedridden, or even I can't do the things I like to do, I can't garden, I can't make myself a bowl of cereal, they may not want to go on with other treatments. And that's not just in the area of resuscitation. Everybody thinks that just fits into code blues and resuscitation. That may fit into their decision on whether or not to do chemotherapy for cancer, to do radiation for cancer. Maybe they'd rather take that trip to Tahiti with the grandkids with what time they have left instead of sitting around the hospital sick as a dog, trying to extend every minute rather than the quality of time they have left.
Thank you, Dr. Callister, for being with us to discuss patient advocacy. You are listening to KUNR Reno Public Radio.